Honey, wake up.
What's going on?
I have news. I have bad news.
Why are you
I don't want you to get upset.
Okay, what is it?
Okay, but promise me you won't get upset.
I'm not going to promise you that.
Okay, but you probably won't get upset, right?
What are you wearing? Why do you have all this stuff on you?
It's protective gear. Listen, I shrunk your car.
You shrunk my, like you got a new car that...
No.
So smaller?
No.
I like the SUV.
Yeah, your Lexus SUV, I shrunk it. You can't use it anymore. It's like a little Hot Wheels now.
What?
Yeah.
How? And why?
The shrink ray I've been working on. I used it and
what
I shrunk.
You just casually brought up a shrink ray.
Yeah.
I thought you've been searching for jobs, not even updating your LinkedIn profile, you said.
I have not been doing that. I've been working on a shrink ray because I thought that would solve all our problems. I'd be famous.
How?
And make
what?
Me a ton of money, make
what?
Us
what?
A ton
did
of
you? What else did you shrink?
Nothing.
What's that in your hand?
It's nothing.
What is that?
I shrunk your dad.
Oh. Oh my God.
This is your father.
Oh my God.
Hello.
Oh my God. Dad.
My baby.
I haven't seen you in 10 years.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, your host, of course. And today we are talking about 1989's, I think, classic Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, a movie I thought that I loved fondly and had a special place in my childhood. And now after watching it, I think I may have mental problems because it's a very strange, strange film. But we'll get into it with my guests. First off, we have the wonderful filmmaker, comedian, and brilliant improviser, Ryan Barton. How's it going, Ryan?
Oh my gosh, it's going so good. I am so happy to be here.
Thrilled that you're here.
Yeah, thrilled. It's a gorgeous day outside.
Beautiful.
And there is so much Culver City traffic.
Yeah.
Because they just shut down everything.
It's just, there's so much construction.
Get to really stay in your car and think about things.
Yeah. And what's cool is that it's like every day. You know, it's not just today. It's all the time here. It doesn't matter what time it is.
No, it doesn't.
All the time.
It doesn't.
Joining us is our old friend from the Bugs Life episode, which you might recall. It's Dr. Benjamin Max Adams. He's the postdoctoral fellow at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County.
How's it going?
I'm
happy
great.
To be back.
I'm so happy that you're back here, Max. It's been a long time.
It has been.
How have you been?
I've been well. I'm just, you know, studying ants, crawling through people's backyards, looking to see what lives in them.
Right, yeah.
Appropriate for Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I was going to say, yeah.
Talk about some backyard insects.
Wayne Zielinski, or what was his name in this movie?
That feels close.
Okay. Whatever, he's close enough.
Wayne. Yeah. We'll just call him Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
So Ryan, a little backstory on Max here. Max climbs trees in the rainforest. He spent a long time studying fire ants. He's the real deal. Okay, he's coming with some serious experience. He's pooped at night in the rainforest alone, so you can trust him.
You can trust that.
Yeah, he's eaten all sorts of weird insects.
Okay, well, just letting you know, Max, you can trust me too, because I have literally the past 3 months, no joke, no lie, I've been watching every video on ants and a lot of bug wars.
Whoa. I'm so excited.
So wait, what is bug wars? I don't know what this is.
Okay, so first off, I just want to say I used to hate it. I used to really hate it.
Because like gross bug.
No, because when the bugs fight each other, they like put in like animal sounds, like swords and like a pig oink, like really bad animal sounds.
Yes.
And it's like, oh my God, I don't need that. It's like too much.
Yeah.
But then I just started watching it. And I'm really learning a lot about a lot of things.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I really am happy you mentioned all these animal sounds, because one of the things that drove me nuts about this movie.
Yes.
The animal sounds.
Oh yeah.
We can delve into it later, but insects making all those noises drove me nuts.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay.
It's really inaccurate.
It was one of my huge pet peeves about that show. Also, I'm kind of like, when you watch it, maybe this is just a guess on my part, but it looks like they have a studio where they just make these bugs fight each other, which is like so sad.
Whoa. Do you know about this? Have you seen the show?
I know about Bug Wars. I haven't watched much of it. For various reasons.
Curious.
It's mostly just like, oh, okay, we're gonna throw two things in a cage and shake it up, and hopefully they'll attack each other.
Yeah.
Which sometimes they're informative, but it's a there's some ethical issues there, even if we're talking about insects. And as a scientist,
coming from a guy who like puts ants in their mouth.
Hey, I get approval to do that.
No, I mean, they must get approval from someone.
Excuse?
Who knows? Science requires you to do another good reason to talk about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. But the ethics behind science is generally pretty rigorous, especially if it involves other animals. Yeah. There's a lot of paperwork and a lot of forums, and Wayne Szalinski is well outside of those bounds.
Yeah, he gets shunned by the scientific community in that conference they keep referring to so many times. Nobody thinks that he's smart. He's not smart. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's a schmuck. Is that wrong? Am I wrong?
It hurts.
Okay.
Because he did achieve something very incredible.
Okay.
Although very dangerous.
Creating a shrinking machine in his attic or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. But like, honestly, guys, don't all great scientists do? Sometimes you got to really.
A little bit of fiddling. Yeah.
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 That makes sense.
I relate to him in that I would absolutely, if you told me no, but I think I was onto something, mm-hmm. I would keep going and endanger my entire family in the process.
I mean, yeah, that's one way to do it.
So that's actually a really good point. A lot of science does happen exactly like that. So pushing envelopes is necessary. The goal of a really ideal scientist is to get to the cutting edge and push our boundary of knowledge a little bit further. Sure. And so, yeah, so at its very base, your goal should be to disregard other people's worries and go for it.
I have a question for you then.
Yeah, go for it.
So let's say you're put in a similar situation where like you have something, I don't know, you have something and you know it goes against like protocol, paperwork, all of that, but you have it and it's tried and true and you have like the one person you can trust. Do you like do the thing where you pass it on or try to push it forward or?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I will go ahead and say that the nice thing about working with insects is, and it's kind of the unfortunate thing depending on who you talk to, is that there isn't much oversight on insects. So to study insects, it really requires you to kill them very often. And so there isn't as much regulation as, say, if you're working with something that has a spinal cord. So mammals, birds,
fish.
Jellyfish. So there's a group called IACUC, which I don't remember what IACUC stands for.
Okay.
But it is the regulatory body of basically like scientific ethics with animals.
Okay.
And so you have to fill out paperwork if you work on anything that has a spinal cord or I think cephalopods, so like
octopus
and squids.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
So those are things that we know they feel
because
pain.
Because they're semi-cute? Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
Ultimately, it's because they are semi-cute. Like, oh, you're fluffy cuttlefish. Things like that. Things that people like feel attached to often have ethical issues.
But if you're experimenting on a cockroach, you do whatever you want.
Bugs don't feel pain.
So I wouldn't say bugs don't feel pain, but
Auntie felt pain. She had a range of emotions.
Okay, so the thing you have to consider is that the insect.
I think it was a she.
Auntie sounds like a she name.
Auntie does sound like a she name, but it is kind of neutral.
Yeah, but that's true. Lazy name. Can I also say that?
100%.
I mean,
the writers were exhausted by the time they got to that
just
part.
Just call it Auntie and move on. Let's go.
By the way, sorry, but speaking of crap names, when they originally titled this screenplay, it was Teeny Weenies.
Yeah.
So just heads up.
Wait, not to just fully diverge from the question, but
no, please.
What?
Yeah.
Teeny Weenies?
Teeny Weenies was the name of this movie. And then they changed it to like Grounded or like something.
The Backyard and like a couple
backyard,
other things.
And then eventually they're like, oh, we'll just take this line of dialogue, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which a lot of people had an issue with because grammatically it should be shrink. Honey, I Shrink the Kids.
No, that's why it's genius. It's not only genius because it's a line of dialogue. It's genius because it's wrong syntax. Where is it?
It sounds colloquial. But it makes sense.
Also, would have loved for it to be called The Backyard.
Yeah.
That's haunting.
It's more accurate and right. More like a horror film, which we were talking about a little bit. It's like a horror movie a little bit.
I remember that ending scene or with Auntie, like it's vivid.
Yeah.
It's vivid. It's hell. Like I hold that memory.
Wow.
It's deep. It's deep.
Oh, I do too. Like this was part of the reason why when Ethan and I were talking about possible movies, I was like, okay, I know it's probably junky, but like right in my heart is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Yeah. Like this is insects everywhere. And
wow. I hate to be insulting the film. I really try not to do that on this program. Yeah. I really so go tough. For the compliments, but I couldn't believe what I was watching last night. I was really stunned by maybe the campiness of it or just how silly. Like I kept thinking about how if you're the parents of these kids and they are more than likely dead, you know, like what are the percentages here that these kids have died with the broom or in the garbage thing or just in the backyard? And they're just like talking as if they're at the mall, which they could have been, apparently. They've mentioned like 9 times.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just he's there. He's on the stilts with the binoculars, like that could easily kill them. The dog is running free. Put him in a cage. That could kill them. I was just, I kept thinking about all these things.
They should have died 5 million times.
Oh, at least. 5 million times. Least. I'm glad we're on the same page on that.
It was clearly a horror movie that someone went like, hey, if we cut out like the beheadings and stuff, we can make this a kid's movie.
Right.
That's why I was like, no, the entire time you're sitting there going like, well, that's going to chop their, oh, it didn't. Huh. Oh, they lived through that. Well, that's surprising.
Oh, another kiss.
I want to see the like a master edit of that, turning it into a horror.
Yeah.
I would. Ooh. So apparently the directors were horror directors, like looking at it.
Well, this guy.
I forget exactly who it was, but.
Oh, my God. I should have his name. John Johnston, I think his name was. This was his first. He did special effects for like the
Sounds like an anti-name.
Yeah, you're right.
Sounds like a wrestler.
I'm just lazily Johnston. Making it up.
Yeah.
He was doing special effects for the old Star Wars movies and Indiana Jones and stuff. So he was like an established guy. Mm-hmm. And then this was his directorial debut.
Wow.
So this is his first movie.
We may know this, we may not. Did he do anything after this?
So great question, because he did a few movies right after this that I love.
Oh.
Right after this, The Rocketeer.
Mm. Don't know it.
Rocketeer? Awesome. Yeah. Watch
don't
that.
Don't know The Rocketeer?
Putting it on the list.
Sure. Oh, sure. Watch The Rocketeer.
Putting it on the
we'll
list
do that.
Right
we'll do that next episode.
It's fun.
Rocketeer. There's got to be some science in there. How do he basically, it's a guy with like
just
a
find an engineer. You
it's
got
kind
it.
Of a similar okay. plot now that I think about it, because it's like a guy who's kind of a doof.
Who is
that
it?
Has
who
an invention.
Him?
Oh.
Do we know?
I don't know.
I
he's
don't
a handsome
either.
Man.
Okay.
Anyways.
He also did one it's of like the Marvel movies, guy. Right?
Got it.
Marvel movies?
I think he did.
Oh,
like,
he did. You're right. The Captain America. This director went on to do eventually the Captain America. I don't know what.
Don't
something
know
or I haven't
one.
Even seen it.
Hmm, okay.
After The Rocketeer, he did The Pagemaster.
Which is
I
great.
Love the right?
The best okay,
Nicole
so
he's good.
So he's a genius.
He's a genius. So he's a certified genius. And then after that, Jumanji.
Okay. I mean,
good night.
Good night. Bye.
And we'll see you guys next episode.
Bye.
Everyone please apparently needs their Honey, I Shrunk the Kids to get launched.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So what you're saying is he has the golden thumb. Whatever he touches
turns to absolute gold. Yes. I know he's done a bunch of other movies. I just don't have them in front of me. But those three that were directly following Honey, I Shrunk the Kids were like, wow, this he's a master.
Well, one of the other directors on it or producers or someone else was one of the people who did Reanimator and stuff like
that's
that.
Right.
Like these really campy horror films. Mm-hmm. And so like it makes sense looking at it from that perspective. That,
yeah.
Like this is the way this movie works.
I mean, the effects in particular are still to this day a little bit unnerving, right?
Yeah.
Like seeing the huge ants, which I saw some behind the scenes stuff. I don't know if you researched that at all, but they made these huge ants and bees and they took like 12 people to move them. It was crazy.
Yeah. The set pieces, I think were probably the kind of the coolest part of that. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think, It's cool knowing he did like Pagemaster and Jumanji.
So he could actually produce decent things.
Yeah, well, it's cool because it's like, you know, how to interact, having a director who knows how to interact with a puppets or an special effect is kind of cool.
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
A way. Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome and haunting. And I'm sure we'll have for years now the picture of like these ants, like the mouth and you could hear, because again, they're making these weird noises
the
and
clicks
stuff.
And stuff.
Yeah, it really stays with you. And so I'm sorry, but you're saying that they don't make any noise at all? Because obviously the shrieking and stuff is
yeah, the shrieking
crazy.
Butterfly is ridiculous. So like that made me cringe inside. Uh-huh. So insects, for the most part, like whenever you think about it, we are very whenever we think about our senses, we are very visual. We rely a lot on sound.
Mm-hmm. Well, except insects. Ryan. Ryan's more of a touch guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm fully like a bat or a mole.
Well, I'm sorry, Ryan, yeah, but you would probably get along better with the ants. So a lot of ants, ants especially, really rely on chemoreception. And so that is basically taste and smell.
Okay. Is that so, what they were doing with those?
Yeah, the antennation okay. is literally what we call that whenever you use your antennae to like things. Touch mm. things. So ants are actually covered in these hydrocarbons. Their outside skeleton is covered basically in like a specific stench. Whoa. And that stench or taste is what tells other ants, hey, I'm your sister. Hey, we work together. We're from the same colony. And so different colonies have a slightly different odor and they can talk to each other through those odors. Ants, whenever they move around finding trails and whatnot, they lay down special odors, and that's actually what they're following. So the very visually oriented ant who's like looking at things and right. pointing and then making clicks and noises, mm-hmm. those things, they're ants do make some noises. We know that some ants will stridulate, which is basically rubbing two like rigid as in has ridges, mm-hmm. Pieces together. So you kind of get like a kind of sound. Okay. So there are ants that stridulate if there's like a tunnel collapse, like everyone come find me. I'm squeaking, like come get me. I'm in danger. So there is some of that.
Okay.
But for the most part, ants communicate like if it's in danger, it will release a pheromone, a alarm pheromone that basically goes, everyone come here, come help. And so ants gotcha. Are really not relying on sounds. And if anything, those sounds would probably give away their positions to potential predators.
Got it.
And so everything making squeaks and moans and groans is just like,
yeah,
yeah.
It should would probably they, would be fairly
silent.
Would they
do that? Because in the film, there's like a scout ant that find, because they have like that big cookie they yeah. find. And so someone, I can't remember who, but one of the kids is
it's
saying
like, it's a scout.
Yeah, it's a scout ant. The other ones will be here soon. Like, is that accurate?
That it's somewhat accurate. So there's a lot of ants that do that. So actually a professor out of Stanford named Deborah Gordon.
Shout out.
Yeah, she's a fantastic, absolutely amazing ant researcher.
Yeah,
we love ecologist.
Deborah.
Yeah.
She's also very funny.
Yeah,
so yes, Deborah's funny. Alerts. Her jokes.
it's a dry wit.
It's a dry wit. Yeah, she's dry, but God, she comes around and it's so good.
Timing. Her timing. Yeah,
so Dr. Gordon does a lot of research on basically ants' jobs. Like, so how do they work and how do they organize things like that? And a lot of her previous work was looking at like, how do you stimulate foraging behavior? So why does an ant decide to go out and look for food? And the ants she works with are these ants called harvester ants, which you'd actually find them around here, around LA. They're big ants that hunt for seeds. Mm. And early in the morning, the harvester ants send out essentially scouts who will basically, yeah, go out on reconnaissance, look for food, lay out trails, and they find it. And then as they come back, if they're successful, other ants will then follow their trail and then lay down more trail pheromones. And so you get this sort of positive feedback where their food resources are what we would call patchy. So you basically have like a spot with a lot of food and then a lot of nothing, and then like a spot with a lot of food. So they're looking for seeds. So often it's like, oh, this plant here is dropping seeds today. And so there's a lot of food. There's a lot of seeds there. Someone found it. They came back with a seed. They, through different means, communicated that like, this is I found food.
Yeah.
And then another ant goes and finds food. And every time they get food, they lay more trail pheromone. So it kind of gets this positive feedback.
And are they going there to eat, or are they going there to collect and bring back to the colony?
The latter. So generally they're going there to collect and bring back.
Okay.
So being outside of the nest is really dangerous. So ants actually, they break up the way they work through their lives. So they start out when they first eclose, which is the term we use for when they leave their pupal state. So they're like,
what's that? Eclose?
Eclose. Yeah.
Okay.
So ants go through full metamorphosis. So they start out as an egg. The egg hatches into like this like little maggot larvae caterpillar like thing. Mm-hmm. That thing in some cases spins a cocoon. Many ants don't, but they go into like a pupal stage, which is basically like the chrysalis cocoon stage when you think of like a caterpillar. And then out of that emerges an ant, an adult ant, the one we would think about.
Gotcha.
But right after they close, they tend to work in the nest. So these are the ants that are young. They're the most valuable because they have the longest life to live. Mm. And so they do things in the nest. They do safe things. And then as you get older, as you get less valuable, as you basically start breaking down, you then get jobs like you take the trash out, or you go out and look for food, because if you're going to get eaten, you're going to likely get eaten outside.
Yeah, you get that serving job.
Yeah.
I don't want
to
do.
Or the very end is you often are the ones that go to battle. So one of the most famous myrmecologists is this professor from Harvard named E.O. Wilson. And he has a really famous quote talking about ants and humans. And he says the difference between ants and humans is humans send their young men to die in war, while ants send their old ladies.
Wow.
And that's So Auntie is actually cool. Not a baby aunt. As they said, Auntie would have actually been grandma.
Yeah. She's a grandma who
ready to stomp out a scorpion.
She's Joan of Arc. Yeah, Joan of Arc. But a lot older.
Yeah. She's great. The matriarch.
So by then all the males are dead.
Oh, yeah. So male ants are interesting. So all the ants you'll see probably on any given day are female. So all the workers are female. The queen is female. However, they do produce males, but males have basically one job. They're flying sperm bags. Fly, breed, die. Mm. And so male ants are pretty useless.
Even in the old age, take the garbage out type, you don't need them to do that?
No, they don't do anything because they don't want to work. So their whole job is to build up a bunch of energy. Uh-huh. So that they can fly and breed. So they do no work. They provide no labor. They are completely useless. They basically go feed me. Okay, great. I'm going to go fuck now.
Right.
Sounds like the life.
Yeah. And they have wings.
They do. Yeah. So there are two groups of ants. Ants have castes is what we call them.
Castes?
Yeah. So they have different reproductive castes. So humans, we just have males and females. Ants have males. And then the females are split into two groups.
Ooh.
The reproductive females, which are the ones that become queens, and then the workers, which can come in a lot of different varieties. You can have what we call polymorphism. Ooh. So they can come in different sizes. So you'll have really large ants, these soldiers, worker ants, and then small little ants that do other little things.
So how do they kill these useless dudes?
So I talked about it previously, but my undergraduate degree, I studied fire ants and their rafting behaviors.
Right. Yes, I recall.
Yeah. And so during a flood or a storm, fire ants will build these rafts out of their bodies to protect the queen mostly. Mm. But if there are any male ants in the raft at start, within 24 hours, all the males are gone. And during the project I was working on, we were like, well, what happened to the males?
Yeah.
So we had them in clear containers so we could see, and you don't ever find the males because presumably the females, all the workers go, okay, well, you're lunch now.
Wow.
So they eat them to get energy to build the raft.
Probably eat them. Yeah. Or don't let them on the raft. One of the two.
Okay. So my thing is this, I'm a little girl, but I want to be a queen.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
How does that happen? How do I get to that status? As opposed to being a worker.
Yeah, yeah. So it varies
boring.
A little bit.
Boring.
So within the Hymenoptera, which are the ants, the bees, and the wasps, and then another group called sawflies, which are a smaller group, within the social insects, which are mostly the wasps and bees and ants, caste determination is often determined by how much food you get as a baby. Mm. So if we don't feed you very much and keep you kind of scrawny, you're going to become a worker. However, if they give you a lot of food, you're going to be able to really beef up, and a lot of that extra energy will go to gonad production. Mm. So the production of sexual organs. And then from there,
So it's about your parents.
Yeah, it's about how much they...
Are your parents feeding you?
Sense. Okay, so social insects are, generally speaking...
There's no guy.
There is no guy. So what happens is mom, queen ant, mates. She then lands somewhere, digs a hole in the ground, and lays a couple of eggs. Those eggs hatch, and they're workers.
Okay.
And then they go out, in many cases, and look for food, while the queen then stays home and keeps laying eggs. And so every ant in the colony, and as a general rule, there are definite exceptions to this, are all sisters, and they all share a mother, the queen. Mm. And so the queen, the system
she's just there eating and laying eggs.
So
that's your goal.
That's the goal.
So hot.
Feed me, feed me, and I'll drop eggs. You take care of it. So
good life.
It's a great life.
Again, E.O. Wilson has this comparison is that ants don't really when we think of social hierarchies in humans, there's definitely a leader directing where everyone goes, but that's not really how ants work. They're they're very much individuals kind of all functioning together. No one's telling you what to do. Mm-hmm. Or there's no queen on top telling everyone. The queen doesn't direct the colony.
Oh, okay. So the colony is taking care of the queen.
Yeah. So E.O. Wilson described it as a factory inside of a fortress. Mm. The queen is the factory producing more and more workers and eventually producing reproductives. So new queens.
Okay.
And then the workers are defending this fortress, their colony.
Are there ever several queens?
Yeah. Yeah. So the Argentine ants we have here are really a unique system. They are what we call a I'm forgetting the word all of a sudden, a super colony. Ah. So a super colony is an ant colony in which they don't have recognition between different colonies. So that cuticular hydrocarbons I was talking about earlier that ants use to like taste and smell and to figure out who is who, they basically don't recognize different colonies. They're all like, oh, cool, you're another Argentine ant. We're buds. Mm. So you can take Argentine ants from here in LA and bring them to Europe and drop them off in the super colony there. And they're like, oh, cool, I can live here, that's fine. Versus like most ants, you think of like these big ant battles.
Isn't there some sort of problem with that though? Aren't they like monopolizing ants?
Yeah. So Argentine ants, the reason they're an invasive ant and the reason they've been so successful in these invaded areas is because they form these super colonies. Other ants would battle against each other and all the Argentines are like, we're cool with each other.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So within the super colony.
Golden State Warriors situation. Yes. Like, let's just collect.
That's exactly what it is,
right?
They go to the NBA playoffs. The Argentine ants go to the NBA playoffs every year. No one challenges
so
them.
Annoying.
Yeah.
Argentines.
God. Yeah, so we'd call those colonies polygyne. It means it has multiple queens. A gyne is the fancy word for a reproductive female ant.
I usually say gyne.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I hear you loud and clear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to, for the rest of this year, use polygyne.
Yeah, polygyne.
Polygyne.
Wait, so just for the movie, because I was like, yeah, those kids would be eaten then.
Immediately.
Because they don't have the chemical hydro, whatever those are.
Auntie would have made a lunch out of them very quickly. And since they're – so ants tend to have preferences in terms of diet. A lot of ants that live on the ground tend to not have enough carbohydrates. So a lot of sugars and stuff in their diet. They tend to do a little bit better in terms of protein. So Auntie may have gone like, you're not worth the fight. I'm going to get some of this some more of this cookie and they go like about my business. Yeah, they really like sugar.
Okay.
Ants that – so a lot of my previous work was ants that live in the canopies of trees, and those are really limited in terms of nitrogen, so protein and – so those, had the kids landed in a tree instead of the ground, they would not have lasted. They'd be like,
bye, birdie.
Hey, little protein packet.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Auntie would not have been their friend.
I am I'm not allergic to much, but I'm allergic to bad attitudes.
That's one thing I know about you.
Yeah. the other thing I'm like very allergic to is ants.
Really?
Ant venom.
Wow.
It is like
ant venom.
Or whatever they buy, whatever they inject in me, it lights me up.
Okay, yeah, so let's go through it. When were you bitten? What happened?
Not in a long time. But like I remember two specific times because I'm from Arizona. I live in the deserts of Arizona. So like bugs are a constant.
And Arizona is a fantastic ant place, actually.
Oh, ants.
Some of the best ants.
I love that. They're like a Pellegrino.
It is.
Of ants, yeah. one time I got bit like in my shin or whatever, and you could just follow the trail because it's just going up my bloodstream to my heart. And then my dad was like, if it goes, it's very big. And my dad was like, if it goes past this point, like I'm taking you to the hospital. Yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah, fair.
But wait, what was going like you just a rash?
So no, it was like puffed. Like, it started like puffed
swelling up.
I swell up immediately, like not a small swell, like a huge swell. Okay. And then that swell turned into a line like following my blood vein.
Oh my
like
God, so scary.
So scary. And then one time I got bit in the foot. And literally for a week, whenever I'd step, like you could feel like it was full of liquid.
Oh my God.
Like it was like that puffed up.
Created
it just
like a
was
pustule.
Like, yeah. Oh. It was like the whole foot. I could just, every time I stepped down, I could feel it, the liquid jiggle in my foot.
Jesus.
So I'm not creeped out by a lot of things, but like human changes in bodies, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
It's gross. It has a spinal cord. Ooh.
You should have seen my puberty. I changed so much.
And let's bring it up. So maybe let's talk about that. I mean, why? Yeah. What is this venom about? Is that in all ants? Does it hurt when that happens?
Yeah, it's a great question. So ants are all female. And so the way they sting you is they have a modified ovipositor.
Ovipositor.
And that means that's their...
What a great joke it would be if you're just making all this crap up. And I'm just like, yeah, okay.
Oh my God, I've always thought about doing that. Like, just like...
Polygyne.
Just add in words that aren't real. It's like teaching someone a foreign language.
Polygyne. All right, sorry.
Yeah, so it's the tool that would be used to lay eggs. And so they modify it, and that's what becomes a stinger. And so in
they
a lot,
modify it,
like it's been modified.
So they don't bite you. And
they
you
do. Get... So they'll bite and then they'll sting. And then there are several ants that have modified that stinger further. So when, just to quickly hit the modifying part,
hit it.
The millions of years of evolution, this ovipositor, because the worker ants aren't producing eggs. They're non-reproductive. They can sacrifice their reproductive organs to do something else.
Whoa.
And so that in the worker ants, that reproductive organ essentially has become a stinger. In some cases, it becomes what we call an acidopore, which is basically an acid sprayer. And so,
oh, yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah, so some ants will spray acid. Others will just rub like a caustic liquid on you. Some will sting you, have an actual stinger. But like at the basal, so at the earliest lineages of ants all had stingers.
You know, that reminds me of like when you start like a video game and they're like, do you want to be the wizard class or like a warrior class?
You.
And
you're like,
so there's a video game where you get to do that with ants.
Yeah, exactly.
There's two awesome ones.
Oh, wait, there really is?
Yeah, there really
is. Wait, name it.
So the first one is Simant.
Okay,
which, Simant.
So like the Sims, same group of people made an ant game back in like the early 90s.
I
don't vaguely remember this. I played the hell out of Simant.
Simant. I wonder if I had Simant on CD-ROM.
I still have Simant.
I'll need to borrow that.
Yeah.
Or I should say, we'll need to borrow that.
But I think the other one they've been working on is called Empires of the Undergrowth. I haven't played that one yet, so I can't speak to it. But like literally that's what you do. Like you, from my understanding, is you take over different colonies and you can basically evolve new types of ants. Like now you get trap draw ants.
Okay, I love that.
That's cool.
Like, you know, Deborah at a party the other day told me this incredible joke.
Oh, go ahead.
Can I say it?
Please. I love her.
And it was all about that game. Knock, knock.
Empire of the Undergirds?
No, the other one.
Simant.
Yeah. Simant.
Right.
Wait, you say Simant who?
Simant who?
I can't play that game. Too many semantics.
Oh,
I know.
Deborah!
And she, honestly, the entire room was dead.
Yeah.
Was gone.
Yeah, that makes sense. You get a couple of drinks in her.
I only know Dr. Gordon in passing.
Yeah.
Please.
You should seriously
introduce her.
Yeah, you should spend some more time with her.
This or any of her students.
Just keep her away from tequila. I tell you what.
She's okay with Reposado, but that Blanco.
She is. This is one of like the premier ant people in my career. I'm just going to hear this and be like, well, you're never going to go anywhere, Max.
I mean, no, we're not talking crap on Brian Brown. It's fun.
Yeah.
And we're only giving her the best compliments.
Yeah, exactly. She killed the room.
She killed it.
With that semantics joke.
Wish
did you hear
I
that?
Semantics. Oh my God. I'm definitely going to remember that.
She's a genius. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
I have how much money the movie made. I don't know if anybody cares about that.
Oh, yeah, I do.
It did. Box it was like a success, right?
It was a successful, you want to guess? This was in 89, I think, so keep that in mind.
50 million?
Okay.
I'm going to go with 120 million.
It's 222 million. It became the highest grossing live action Disney film ever, a record it held for 5 years.
Do we know who beat it?
I don't, but it was something in 94.
Wow, dude, I wonder what the
inflation rate
it would be now or what that 200
I don't want to think about it, honestly.
Yeah, that's messed up.
It would make me feel so good if it was like $1 billion.
It's the most successful film of all time.
Yeah.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I couldn't believe that it made so much money. I mean, again, I know it was a big part of a lot of people's childhood and et cetera, the special effects are great, but Jesus, watching this movie, the last line of the movie, does anybody remember what the last line of the movie was?
What was it?
It was the kid going,
oh,
I get it now.
French class.
I was like, what? How is that allowed? No.
Yeah.
It's allowed because it's the same people who wrote Auntie.
You're right.
They're
yeah.
just what like, am I we're talking about? Exhausted.
Look, just bring back up French Kissing again. Come on.
Yeah.
It'll be funny. People will love it. Don't test it.
Don't test it.
Don't test it.
Don't put it up on its feet. Somewhere.
I wanted to also mention the intro sequence because it was my favorite part of the film.
It's amazing.
The little animated intro, Ren and Stimpy-esque.
It's cute.
I thought that was so good.
Did you watch the Who Framed Roger Rabbit short that used to come in front of it?
Oh.
Do you remember that?
There's like a
Roger Rabbit short that happened before it. It's like
with
7 minutes
long. With the baby?
With the rattle.
Oh, that I have seen with the knives and stuff like that. Yeah. It's like very dangerous.
The movie's genius. But super genius.
The first 14 minutes, the Roger Rabbit and then the animated introduction.
Yes.
What was that?
So good.
That's kind of like how they duped us with Coco, where they like made us watch a 30-minute awful Frozen short. And then they're like, okay, here's Coco. And you're like, why are you doing this to this film?
Why?
Yeah. But it made Coco all the better. Because now this when Coco starts, you're like, whoa.
And you're like, thank God.
The godfather of Pixar.
I know. But also.
A lot of people say that. I didn't say that. But a lot of people have said
that. Yeah, I've heard that around.
Yeah.
I actually haven't seen it yet.
Ooh, gotta see Coco.
It's so good. Oh,
I love Coco. I cried twice during Coco.
Up did me in. And then Toy Story 3. I was like, come on, Pixar. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
No, you can do it more.
You can do it more.
You should.
And you should.
It hurts my soul.
And that short, if I'm remembering correctly, very disturbing, very scary, kind of like, right? The baby one.
The baby one. It was dark.
Yeah.
Weird move to do that.
I loved it.
It fits with the theme of the movie, though. Like, oh, this is all kind of strangely dark.
Scary as hell.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to talk about remote-controlled lawnmowers. There's a remote-controlled lawnmower in this movie, and I was thinking, why is that not more of a thing? Everybody should do that probably. And so I did some Googling and you can buy remote controlled lawnmowers.
I wouldn't.
It's like a Roomba for your yard.
It is kind of like a Roomba looking thing. Yeah. It's a little bigger, obviously. And there was, I saw like tutorials where you can DIY, create your own remote controlled lawnmower, and it looked pretty easy.
So does it look like Wayne Szalinski's remote control lawnmower?
It does not.
I want all the antennae and like spinning things.
You can add that yourself, I think. It's more like a drone. It looks like a it's out of two like PVC pipes put together. But anyways, if you're into that, friggin' go ahead.
100%.
Because I definitely have a yard here in LA.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah.
Tons and tons of yard.
Yeah, that real estate I got in the back.
Dogs having great ears was a quote in the movie.
Yeah, that's actually true.
Yes, that's exactly. They're very accurate there. Dogs can hear better than us.
Yep, they hear better. They hear a wider range of frequencies than us.
Yes.
They can move their ears around.
They've got all that musculature. Yeah, I read a cute fact, which is that dogs with perked ears usually have better hearing than dogs with floppy ears.
Aw.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But of course. Yeah,
look cute.
Yeah, then it can direct it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I also read that puppies are born deaf. And they can't hear anything until they're 21 days old.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
Mammals are weird.
It's kind of cute.
Mammals are weird, though.
Yeah, and I hate them.
Yeah. Puppies pass.
Spinal cord, no thank you. Yeah. Give me those ants.
Let me lick those ants.
Hey,
he's into some weird stuff. I don't know. Apparently, he says it's a protocol.
The way you collect ants, the easiest way to collect ants sometimes is what we call the lick and stick method, which is you lick your finger, you stick the ant, and then you can put it into the container.
Yeah.
That sounds legit to you? That sounds official?
I'm pretty sure I've done that.
I mean, like you
but
can
that's
use,
what I'm saying.
Like, so the other option is you use forceps and like trying to get
too hard.
It can be a pain in the butt. And like ants come in big groups, so you can just kind of.
But you did let it crawl in your mouth?
No, that also happened, but that's a whole nother story.
Max says that this is all just claims that I assume are false. Yeah. Max says that that's how you differentiate between ants.
Okay, so
you put them in your mouth and you taste them. Don't kill it, but you taste it, and then you let it go, and that's how you can tell. Like, oh, this kind of ant tastes like fruit.
Actually, fruit is a good way. So there are groups of ants that produce. So ants produce all these chemicals. That's how they communicate. And so some of the ants, like the what we would call the formicines or the dolichodorini, these are the like carpenter ants, and then like these odorous house ants or the Argentine ants are part of the dolichodorini.
Okay.
They, if you smash them, they smell kind of like blue cheese.
Oh.
And so it's producing
Give me a cracker.
Yeah. Actually, I think it smells pretty good. But if you smell that or taste that, you know it's that group of ants. Mm. And so if
they don't sting you?
So those ants, neither of those ants have stingers. Mm. And a lot of ants yet.
Making them get modified?
Well, so they've already been modified. So they started out basally with stingers and have lost their stingers. Okay.
They went from basil to blue cheese.
Yeah, basil to blue cheese.
What you're saying.
What a weird flavor combo.
Yeah, that's some sharp tastes.
Around the... Yeah.
It's like a really bad caprese salad.
Yeah, it's gone wrong. Yeah.
But yeah. So some will taste kind of like blue cheese. Others are really tangy. And it's a quick way to like, oh, that's what that is. And
because they look the same, so it's just easier. Well,
so some of the... In some cases, yes, but it's more of a... It's sort of a joke, but it's also kind of a like, no, it legitimately you can differentiate these ants by taste.
Okay. Have you eaten any insects, bugs, anything like that?
Yeah. I think I've eaten like a grasshopper, so I could get like a free Cold Stone Creamery thing. Scoop or something.
I walked past
Survivor
like that.
Or something. Yeah.
Wait, you were on Survivor?
No, like it was like a Survivor promo or something. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I think that's like the only kind of like bug I've
How was the grasshopper?
Crunchy, scaly, you know.
Not much flavor.
Not much. Yeah, just like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cooked up though.
And I wouldn't eat it. Some guy at 7-Eleven last night offered me a lollipop with a scorpion in it. And I was like, I'll pass.
Just randomly? Just like, here's my
scorpion
pop.
He was like, hey, you like pranks? And I was like,
not really.
I was like, nah, I'm okay. And he's like, dude, you gotta buy this lollipop, man. Prank your friends. And I was like, I'm okay. And he, the whole transaction, he's like pushing this lollipop on me.
Damn, desperate.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I read that you were stung by a scorpion. Is that correct?
Oh, yes.
That's no fun.
Where did that information get leaked out? Probably.
It's part of the secrets of research.
Yeah, that was... It's truly a wild experience.
Well, let's hear it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just remember, from Arizona, lived like on the desert. They're everywhere. But, you know, you're pretty careful. But I was at a neighbor's house and I was walking. I just put my foot down and I felt something that felt like a splinter. Like,
sure.
Like a wood splinter going to you. So I look down and I see the scorpion. I'm like, oh, man. I definitely just got stung. And it's like scary when you first get stung by a scorpion because... There's bark scorpions, which are the most kind of poisonous and the thing that people are allergic to the most. Mm-hmm. So you have to like just monitor what's happening very closely. And it's a waiting game. And then if you feel certain symptoms, it's like go to the hospital.
Damn.
So I remember stung me. I was like, oh, I was like, all right, everyone, there's a scorpion. I just got stung. And then like I opened the door. I took like two steps. And on my second like step, my foot hit the ground. And it just was like a bullet just like ripped through. Because it was the side of my foot. So it's like the soft part. It's like sensitive.
Oof.
And it just like... I could not walk. It was almost unbearable for a second.
Whoa.
It was wild.
How long did these effects last?
Pain lasted for a while for a second, but then it mostly just got like swollen. Mm-hmm. So just like my foot like blew up. So it's just like you put some ice. So luckily nothing like happened where it traveled like at my leg or like I got nauseous. It just was like so painful.
Yeah. So scary probably just to even see the scorpion after having that feeling.
Yeah. Scorpion, they're like everywhere though. So you're kind of like, you're like, okay. This one was so stupid though because it wasn't like I just like walked past it for like a second, you know? It wasn't like I was intimidating anything. It wasn't like I deserved it. It was like, I looked down and I was just like, are you kidding me? Like,
I stepped on you.
I barely stepped on you.
Yeah. But that's honestly when most stings happen is like putting on clothing or something like that. So like,
damn,
I've been stung by lots of things, but I spend a lot of time messing with things that sting.
Scorpion?
Not a scorpion, actually. Okay. No scorpion. So I was like, oh, what is that like?
I beat you.
Yep, there you go.
And we'll see you next time. Thank you so much. Yeah. Ryan wins.
So there's this really interesting group of ants called the acacia ants or the twig dwelling ants. And they're really famous because they have this awesome mutualism. So they work together with this tree where they defend the tree. The tree grows these big thorns that the ants hollow out and live inside of.
Oh.
And the tree also produces these things that are called Belchian bodies, which are basically little protein packets that the ants can eat.
Whoa.
And they also have what are also called extrafloral nectaries. So it's a non-flower thing that produces nectar.
Cool.
Extrafloral nectar. And so the ants live in this tree, eat from this tree, drink from this tree. And if you happen to walk near this tree, the ants dive bomb you. So like 10 to 100 ants will jump off this tree and immediately start stinging you.
Damn.
And it is the most awful thing in the planet. Because like, so I'm not allergic to most ants. Interesting, a lot of entomologists become allergic to what they study.
Become allergic?
Yeah. So if you get constantly stung by something, you can develop allergies.
Oh, man.
As a, also, if you're a lot of things like roaches, a lot of insects shed a lot of stuff. They produce a lot of chemicals. They shed a lot of exoskeleton. And so you can develop allergies to it. Damn. You can develop like respiratory issues. I have issues with this group of ants, Pseudomyrmex, which is the twig ants and the acacia ants.
That's your enemy.
Yeah. They when they sting me, they light me up. Like I get massive swelling. Ooh. And I walked under one of these trees once, and you're just kind of like, you're walking through the forest. If you're not paying attention, you're like, oh, that hurts. Ow. And you're just all of a sudden covered in 100 ants that have, whoa, that are literally dive bombing out of this tree.
Damn.
to get you because you got too close to their home. Mm. Yeah. Okay. So it's this really famous mutualism studied by one of the like premier ecologists of our time, this guy named Dan Jansen.
Dan Jansen.
Well, Max, I'll take it back. You win. No. Yeah, that's way cooler.
Yeah,
that, and I way mean, more
no,
deadly.
No, I no, bombed. That is, they're not deadly at all. They're just obnoxious. I've been lit up by a bullet ant once, and that was awful.
You survived.
I told my story the last time we were here, but my lab mate, this guy named Evan Gora, he actually had a much worse situation. So I got stung in the finger while climbing. Evan, we were setting up a tree, so a lot of my research before I moved to LA was studying ants that live in trees and the rainforest. Evan was putting a rope through a tree and a bullet ant fell and landed and stung him on the neck.
Whoa.
And Evan was like nearly hallucinating. He was saying he had to like sit down had like throbbing pain in his neck and stuff. He was like, I'm having trouble deciding if like where the trees end. And like, it was pretty loopy. We were like, all right, we're going to have to call it a day. Evan is done.
Wow.
It's an incredibly painful experience, but it's.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, shout out to Evan.
Yeah. Evan's
survival story right there.
Evan definitely has the worst stings situation that I've seen. There's another guy who like squatted down into one of their colonies by accident, got like 12, 15 of these stings.
On his butt?
On his legs and probably up his legs. It's
up his legs. Yeah. I think we all know what you're trying to say.
That's also what I call my butthole.
Interested in people checking out the upper part of my legs later tonight. There's a kid who sits in pollen. Speaking of all these allergy things, if I don't know people that are allergic to pollen, maybe I do and I just don't know that about them because I don't listen. What were you saying?
I would say if you're going where I think you're going, this question.
Yes.
Great question.
Oh, then you take it.
No, are you saying like if you were allergic to pollen, you were shrunk and you fell like into pollen, you were allergic.
Would you still?
You would
cease to exist. Right?
So bad, right? Because
he says in the film,
I'm too small.
I can't breathe it in. And I was like, that is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Unless, of course, I'm dumb. In which case, maybe that's true.
Yeah. Are we dumb?
I'm
be
not.
Careful how you answer this.
I'm on the same page as you all. So I am not a plant expert and I'm definitely not an allergy expert by any means. But my understanding of pollen is that pollen is often microscopic. It can be so small that it's basically best seen with a nice microscope. And so if you're according to them 3/4 of an inch tall, you're still going to be that guy just basically bathed in pollen and he should have been asthmatic to the extreme.
Okay. Yeah. And his whole body.
That would be my
out.
Expectation.
Yeah.
What an awful way to die.
Yeah.
And watch your brother die.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Just basically my lungs are collapsing or swelling up. Yeah. I'm done.
You know, there's a version of this that's really dark and we got to get our hands on
honestly,
it.
Honestly, they should make a campy B horror movie, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, where they shrink down and then
make Honey, I Shrank the Kids.
Yep. Yep.
Fix it.
Solved it.
And then retell the story. But
oh my God. So good. Because one could die from the broom.
Yeah.
One could die just in the garbage bag, tossing around with God knows what, you know?
There's so many levels.
The ants could wreck one. Easy.
Yeah.
Pollen.
You have
easy.
The one kid and then the last kid gets eaten. And like that's.
Yeah. Scorpion.
The family never finds the kids. And it's like, man, I wonder what happened to them.
You know what the family does? Kill themselves.
Yeah.
Oh.
Am I right?
Very a la The Fog.
A la The Fog. Like I said it like that is the just standard classic film.
The ending of that film is so crazy.
A la Citizen Kane. Yeah, they killed themselves because they shrunk their kids accidentally.
God, that sled.
I thought this is just another stupid example of how Wayne Szalinski's an idiot, and I'm sorry for doing it.
No.
But it really bothered me when he comes into the first time after the kids get Shrunk? Shrink? Yeah.
I don't know.
Whatever.
I'm not an etymologist. Okay.
Shrunk, right?
Yeah, get shrunk. After they get shrunken, he comes in. I'm just going to change it every time now.
Okay, I love that.
He comes in.
Shrinked.
And he goes like, oh, my couch. Like, he tries to sit and he falls. And then he's like, I guess my couch is gone. And it's like, the only other thing in this room is a giant shrink ray gun.
100%.
Look for the couch. He looks for the couch way later in the movie. It takes him like another half hour till he's like,
there was a baseball. Thing went off.
And, yeah. Right. Yeah. And by the way, can we just talk about that for 1 second? Because at the end, somehow the baseball fixes the machine and he's able to.
The heat from the laser is causing this issue.
It's what making, the hell was that? Did I miss that? Yeah. Did you guys get it?
No. Well, there's nothing to get about the science of the shrink ray.
I just didn't even know how it was like explained to the audience. All that I know in my head right now is. Baseball, everything solved.
I bought it. Because how many times do you have something electric and you just go like those N64 cartridges?
But like that it even makes, that makes more night, sense. Yeah. That makes more sense to me as far as like, oh, the baseball hit it. Now it works. Now somehow because it got jolted with electricity, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what happened. He somehow like uses the baseball and just like lays it next to the machine. I was so lost right there.
He could have just turned off the laser. Like the baseball is blocking the laser, which was heating things up, which none of this makes sense anyway. Okay. So the entire premise of how this machine works is that it reduces so everything's made of matter, and that matter is made of atoms, and there's space between atoms. Mm-hmm. And the entire premise is that he's going to shrink the space between atoms. So that happens in the real world in like neutron stars and like black holes and stuff like that. So he's creating a black hole machine. And so like already I'm just like, oh, okay. So you're going to destroy everyone if this works.
Love like fast forwarding into the future, which we obviously know through the sequel, they just shrink themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Or the parents. But even more so, it's like, yeah, he becomes a supervillain named the Black Hole.
Ooh, that sounds good.
I like it.
It could be part of the horror. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's a bad guy.
Honey, I Shrunk Us All.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah, we're back in, baby.
I know this is your film, Ryan, but can he still kill himself at the end?
100%.
Okay. That's all that I want.
I'm all that's left.
I have a question for you guys. It's getting to be nighttime in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're trying to make their way. And they each grab a stick that lights on fire and stays on fire neatly. And they all look the same. And my question to you guys is, what the hell is that?
You know, now that I think about
Swamp gas.
What?
Like the physics when you're that small, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, wouldn't that truly, like, wouldn't it just be like,
they do a couple things. So actually there is this whole commentary about like the size you have to be to start a technological society, because if you're really small, so like we never have to worry about ants becoming like technological because there's a size limit at which the amount of heat like a fire gives off and how close you can get to actually manipulate it.
Sure.
Like there's a limit to that. So an ant actually can never manipulate. I don't remember the exact physics behind it, but like being able to ignite something and keep it lit at a certain size. And
what if they're very far away with a huge rod? Well, then you'd have
to, like it just gets really convoluted. And I think like it literally just won't stay lit for long enough.
Okay. Yeah. But that makes sense.
I don't remember all of the premise behind it, but basically there's this like, you have to be somewhere around our size. Hmm.
So do you have to be able to start a fire to be part of the technologically advanced?
Yeah.
I mean, there's arguments against it. So like, could dolphins become, like if humans were gone and dolphins had millions of years to evolve, they've got big brains already. Could they develop, they use tools to some degree. Mm-hmm. Could they develop like a technological society, a water-based?
Can we make that movie also?
What is the Kurt Vonnegut book where they end up like all the humans basically end up as dolphins? It's Cat's Cradle? Oh. I don't remember which one.
Okay. I'll read that.
Add it to the list, baby.
I don't remember. Dolphin Tech.
Yeah.
Right after I finish my Cosmo for May, though.
But basically, I have no idea. There's no way that those things would have stayed lit.
They just look so neat.
I want to know how they built all that stuff. Like, not just the like this thing stays lit, but they built a harness for the ant. Yep. They have all this like equipment that they have around the Lego piece.
Hilarious.
I'm just like, how did you guys do all this so quickly?
They go to sleep. They wake up. They have like a whole city. They have like a little village.
They built a camp.
What the hell are you talking about? And also, they didn't need any of that. So they didn't even use it. It was just there. And then they woke up. And they left. And one kid, the smallest kid, when they wake up says, can we sleep longer? It's like, we need to get to safety. We need to. Yeah.
Remember the giant scorpion that tried to eat us? We just put some sticks up to defend ourselves. Let's go, Nick.
There wasn't even a purpose said for all of that stuff. No. It was just over there. I thought that was a huge oversight. Why build that? Why build that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to know how. I'm just like, these are impressive kids, like going from like, oh, we don't know anything about being outdoors. Oh, we built a harness actually for this ant that perfectly holds all of us onto it. And like,
going to pitch this.
Hit it.
They're not the first ones to actually be shrunk.
They came across the society.
And they've been shrunk by the evil. What's his name?
The dark hole.
The dark hole. Yeah, the dark hole.
This is the beginning of the dark hole.
And I don't know, maybe they like saw them and were like, all right, we're going to protect them or that's the only explanation.
Honestly, that explanation so much better than
I'm all for it.
Bull crap that I was thinking that they assumed that we knew. I don't know. I thought that was so dumb, but I love this that there's like secret other kids that have passed away. Yeah. It'd be great if they came across in the horror, Honey, I Shrank the Kids, some bones, you know, some dead kid bones.
I've been doing this for years.
Yeah, exactly.
Love that.
Okay.
Love that.
I assume you're writing all this down.
It's all
we're gonna get sued.
All
right,
good. I trust you.
There's no way it's living.
Can we just in general talk about how every person in this movie is a terrible human being? Wow. Like how all of them interact, like the parents interacting with each other, the kids interacting with each other. I'm like, wow, Gen X. Like,
yeah,
I'm really sorry that this is your homie. It's
like commonplace.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like this is your expectation for early high school, middle school. Like,
very strange. I just want to know if you think a scorpion would beat an ant in a fight. Because they battle in this film.
A single ant? I would say yes. The fact that Auntie doesn't have, 30 sisters with her going like, oh, we're just going to eat all of you.
Right.
Is going to. Yeah, it's ridiculous. That scorpion would have destroyed a single ant. Cool. But the kids would have never been able to chase off the scorpion. So like, if we just think about like the thickness of an exoskeleton.
Yeah.
They would have just like the scorpion would have been like, I wear armor.
He threw a spear into its eyes or something like that. It was a great throw.
Yeah, but that's also armored. Like
on the football team.
Yeah. Now he
should be Russ shouldn't be on the football team. No. It's his little brother.
Yeah, exactly. He's got an arm.
He's got
look out for him.
Next Tom Brady.
There was just a huge line I was reading in all caps. Says, who built that crap while they slept? Yeah. But we talked about that.
Love that, yeah. Glad we got to it.
I thought it was funny how Wayne falls asleep while working on the machine. Like, instead of continuously looking for his children, which is what anyone would do, he goes to work on the machine to try and fix it, to leave them to die. And then not only is working on it, but falls asleep.
Yeah.
So I thought that was just good. Like you're saying, parenting, just a good person.
Just, he was just working all A+. So much,
they just accidentally fell asleep.
Right, sure.
I'm really trying to give him a little bit of a hero.
I appreciate that.
So, that's reasonable. That. Like, science hours, the kind of expectation is that, like, there is no delineation between home and work and whatnot. You kind of are constantly thinking about it because, like, as a scientist, you're basically paid to think.
Yeah.
Right.
And to come up with ideas and then to implement them. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I've definitely fallen asleep in my lab before while doing work. But I didn't have kids.
Right. That were possibly dying 30 feet from you.
Slightly different story.
Yeah. Also, a little bit more motivated. Do you guys have a better solution to how to find the kids? Because he does some really dumb, he's hooked himself
They're inventive,
up.
Inventive, though.
Yeah, it's inventive and cool. But took way too much time, probably. We didn't see how long that took to build.
Apparently less than a day.
Whoa, definitely less
than a day. They built multiple things. Like, how does everyone build all this stuff so quickly?
Really fast.
I'm super impressed by these engineers.
Yeah. Unless he had that in the garage or something. I don't know why you would. But I just thought like, oh, this is probably not the best way to, like, I thought from an audio perspective, he could go out there with like a little satellite dish and headphones and then maybe try to hear them.
Huh.
But I don't know how else to try and save your kids.
Yeah. I try to think of something creative. Like what would I do to find a small thing?
Yeah.
And I don't have an answer.
You'd get stilts and binoculars.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Thank you.
I mean, from the kids' perspective, if they had just climbed up on something tall and waited,
Mm. Oh, sure.
They would have probably like, so like if you get lost in the woods, the first thing that, so I've done a lot of tropical research and the first thing we train people to do is, so often we're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. There's usually like a set spot that we are working in and it may be delineated. It may not be, but often you can kind of walk off and be like, oh crap, I don't see anyone.
Yeah.
So the first thing they train you to do is don't, and the first thing we train students to do is stop. Mm. Stop and just yell.
Okay.
Chances are we'll hear you, we'll find you. If not, don't go anywhere. Because we can figure out where you were and probably where you walked off to.
Ooh.
And so Wayne literally does that. He's like, oh, I probably threw them away. If they had stayed right there near the trash can and like just been like,
movie over.
Totally.
Movie was over. The biggest problem is the kids left.
Yeah, we needed them to move.
Yeah. The sister was like, we got to make this an hour 30. So.
Yeah. But there's got to be some dangerous stuff in this backyard. Yeah.
Let's go find an ant.
And make friends with it. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Earthworm, there's an earthworm burrow scene.
I don't know anything about earthworms. I wish I could sounds be like, good. Yes.
And I don't want to.
Yeah.
Boring.
Boring name, yeah, too.
Earthworm. Oh,
yeah.
Worm.
Okay.
Yeah. I think
it's
I
just
get
a tube.
It.
We have a bug called a butterfly. Like, let's get
let's
crazy.
Check that out. Okay, I have a few things that you emailed me, Max, which was so great. Thank you for doing that. Scientists out there that are coming on the show, you don't have to do this. Normally you don't, but Max went ahead and emailed me some points here, which I thought was great. The physics of shrinking someone you mentioned, how being small would change everything and make none of this movie possible.
Yeah, so like
commented on that, but
the first thing is like, so if you're just smashing the space together between atoms, you're not actually changing the weight of anything. So like, all those kids would have actually been the exact same weight. So like when he tried to sweep them up, he would have been like and just like hit something that weighed as much as a kid.
That would have been cool.
So like the density shouldn't have changed according to his like, here's how we shrink things.
Right, right.
So like it would have just been like he would have never been able to pick up the bag because it would have been full of four kids.
Wow.
Like crazy. Everything should have weighed or like whenever they pick up the sofa. But like the basic premise is like literally all we've done is smashed all the atoms closer together, essentially, or the space within the atoms.
So they should have just not said how he did it.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, in part. And so I was like, the other thing is like, so the world really changes actually whenever you get small, in a lot of ways, the way you interact with other objects. So a great example of that is the way they treated water in this movie. It was actually, I think, pretty well done. So it's kind of like, it almost looked like snot the whole time. And honestly, that's not that inaccurate as to how water may interact with an insect. So if you get into a tub or a pool, you get out and like, it's not really that noticeable. You may add like 2 to 5, maybe even 10% of your weight on in just like extra water. Mm-hmm. If you put a mouse in a tub of water and pull it out, it actually doubles its weight because
the fur?
Yeah. Well, just because so much water sticks to you. So the amount of water that sticks to you kind of ends up depending on your size in some ways. In tiny insects, water becomes almost like syrup. So dealing with surface tension, so like an insect, a really dangerous thing to deal with is whenever it rains, it's not that it's this like explosion of water like they had. It's like basically this sticky gloop of going boom. And if you get stuck onto it, you can't get out. You're like stuck in syrup.
Damn.
And so the biggest issue is then breaking surface tension.
Sure.
And so like there are many points in which like, they don't have to worry about like falling great distances, which I actually thought they did pretty well. They launched these kids in like all sorts of weird ways. And I'm like, oh, wow, that should have broken everything. But as a super small thing, you don't pick up enough velocity.
Yeah.
And so actually they shouldn't hurt themselves. So like that was actually intentionally or unintentionally well done. And the water was intentionally or unintentionally fairly well done, in my opinion.
Okay.
The other thing is like, so like you see like flies and stuff like that climbing on like the ceiling of your house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Flies actually don't have to deal too much with gravity. Gravity isn't a major effector whenever you're that small. So you still have gravitational forces acting on you, but other forces like friction or adhesive forces like water tension actually become so much more you weigh so little that those forces are more important. So actually climbing up things is a lot easier.
So
and then you have this whole issue with like as you get smaller like that, part of the reason insect eyes are so different, one, they completely evolved along a different pathway than us. But as you get really small, the way you can focus on things changes. So if you look across like mammals, all of our eyes, unless you get to like nocturnal things, or even if you're really small or really large, your eyes are tend to be fairly large until you get larger. Like the proportion of our head that is eye is much smaller compared to like a rat. And the reason behind that is your ability to focus on things is dependent on the lens size of your eye.
Wow.
And so if you shrink these kids down, they basically become blind, like, because you can't, you literally can't see anymore. And so like, there are just, there's so many issues with like, okay, well, one, you would have weighed a ton. Two, now you can't see. Three, the water just drowned all of you.
Like, these are all great for the horror movie, by the way.
We can't see.
All of a sudden you're blind.
I, that would be terrifying.
Yeah. And legit, like you could also explain it in scientific terms. Yeah, but you'd be like, damn.
I'm not a physicist. And like, it's
real.
I'm probably getting some of the details wrong about like how sight would work at that size. Uh-huh. I'm almost certainly getting the details wrong.
Great.
But for the most part.
So all of this is false.
Yeah. Most of it was fair, was it somewhat on good. Target. Yeah. If we call that datum ex rectum.
Datum ex rectum.
Yeah. From out the butt.
Right. I love that DJ.
Yeah. It's
just headline Coachella.
His set list.
Right. Yeah, he is fantastic. But yeah, okay. So it's, I just.
And then you also said that what they get right is insect morphology.
Yeah. So like the actual models that they use are actually fairly good. Like,
okay.
Like, was that an ant I could identify? Like, I'm like, oh, it's that. No, but I can look at it and go like, oh, that it, you've got the right parts in the right way. And like, I would guess you're either Formicine or Dolichoderhine, which should be in California, which is where they're supposed to be.
Okay.
And maybe I could put a genus on it and go like, it's within reason. Hmm. It's like, and that's pretty impressive
it,
for like
eat how.
Yeah. The mouth parts are done really well. Oh, like okay. They went into like that. Really good detail. Like that. So ant mouths are really strange. You've got these big mandibles and then you have
looks
these
strange and gross.
Yeah. You've got these little like internal finger things called palpi, okay. Which they use like manipulate food. And the ant's got these palpi. It's got these great, like it's got all the hairs.
Hate it.
Like it's really.
I hate so, palpi.
All of it's fair.
I'm going to say it.
Ant mouth parts, like most insect mouth parts are fascinating and disturbing. So like insect mouth parts and insect genitalia are crazy things. Like they're covered in hairs and spines and twists and turns and like all sorts of just ridiculous morphological it's and like, I don't even know what the word is. Just,
yeah.
They're interesting.
And
so I really like
love
it
anyways.
Yeah. It's disturbing, but it's,
yeah,
I was very impressed with the attention to detail they gave to the insect, to the ant, the scorpion.
And the bee also?
The bee, you don't really get a lot of great close-ups on it.
That's true. Yeah, you don't really see the bee.
But even what you could see seemed appropriate.
Would they get killed by like the wings of the bee?
Yeah, so I was thinking about that. I was like, how do you hold on to that bee? So that from like a, I have no idea if those kids could have remotely held on. Like those things move quick. Like a bee can run you down. Can you imagine trying to hold on to something that's moving at like bullet speed is what it would feel like, I imagine.
And its ability to like
maneuver.
Like,
yeah.
Like it's not like you're
getting like, jerked.
Oh God.
Right. Yeah. Moving direct, changing direction so fast, probably. Yeah.
Not to mention those wings are coming up like all the time. Like,
right.
I was
another great way for a kid to die.
Yeah.
In the horror
just
version.
Launch a kid with a bee.
I'm going to ride this bee. And
I actually like the idea of a kid falling off and then the wings just keep going. You know?
Yeah, that's good.
The great thing is you could drop a kid off and it wouldn't kill him because they don't pick up enough velocity. And like we could find little Timmy later and he's like, I didn't die.
Yeah.
I'm here.
And then he does die.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
he
well,
does.
Something else. He's going to die.
Yes.
Yeah. They're all going to die. Would it make a huge dent in the ground because he still weighs 100?
Oh, but yeah.
If you still
if we're working from that premise, how do they even get on the bee? That bee just immediately squished.
Good point.
Yeah. Interesting. I love the twist of they're small, but they weigh the same.
They
yeah,
should if
they
based on
move.
How they smashed. The explanation
you'd be
for
so powerful.
You would be Ant-Man.
You would be Ant-Man.
That is literally how Ant-Man works. So where he's like, oh no, I still have all my mass.
Right. What,
guys, we just really came full circle.
So, yeah, we just wanted to promote Ant-Man and the Wasp. You guys should go see that sequel.
Go see it. It's been out. It's done. It's on Netflix now.
Netflix. Wish. Ryan Barton as the titular Ant-Man. Unbelievable performance.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I mean, I honestly, Paul Rudd was good in the first one, but you.
Thank you.
In the second one.
And we grossed. Almost 200.
Yeah. Which is really impressive.
Which is impressive for Ant-Man.
Okay, so that's pretty much all the questions I had. Ryan, do you feel satisfied with your
I got
shrunk knowledge?
Everything I wanted answered.
Okay.
And most of it, the big part that I want to answer was like, yeah, if they shrink Can they fall off surfaces from like from far and like still be okay?
Yep. Should.
Yeah. And then
should
like, okay. Yeah, they like just sounds like, yeah, they just bounce off a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Would you recommend if a friend told you I have not seen this movie?
I would watch it with them.
Okay. That's nice of you. That's a good friend. That's a good friend. Yeah. And we do, you know, a plugs type section if there's something you people should check out.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, well, I guess if you listen to my voice and you're like, I gotta meet that guy. yep. I do improv at Upright Citizens Brigade all the time on Herald Night. And then I'm currently working on a couple projects, but none of them are like ready to be plugged yet.
Okay.
Because they're not ready.
Where can people find you on their social media
devices?
Oh, sure.
I love a good soch. Very active on the Instagram under Rybrator, RRYBRATOR, baby.
Oh, yeah.
But not baby, just that was just me adding that. So just Rybrator as is.
Yeah, baby was an ad lib.
Baby was an ad lib, something fun and charming about me.
Great. Well, thank you for being here. Max, is there something you'd like to tell people about?
Yeah. So, no matter when this comes out, we at the museum have an annual bug fair. This year it's going to be May 18th and 19th, but we do it every year. It's always the second or third week of May. We would love to see a lot of people out there. It's a great place to talk to experts about insects. There's lots of insect vendors who are out selling insects or insect paraphernalia. Okay. Yeah, you can actually come and get pet insects.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm coming.
Yep.
Ryan's in.
Yeah, so we would definitely encourage people to come do that. Also, we have an ongoing project that we call Bioscan, where we are looking at the diversity of insects here in LA. Part of LA is within the California Floristic Province, which is a biodiversity hotspot. So it means that we have a lot of things that live here in our region that don't live anywhere else on the planet. And we're trying to map that diversity, discover new species, and most importantly, increase the amount of diversity of biodiversity we have in our city.
Cool.
So we're looking for ways to do that. And part of that project is we set up traps in people's yards to see what insects are there. So if it's something you'd be interested in, please go by the Natural History Museum's website, which is nhm.org.
nhm.org. And people can volunteer to have you trap up their yard?
Basically. That. And we also use a program called iNaturalist to document insects, which people can do with their smartphones. It will identify things for you, everything from insects to birds, plants.
Ooh.
It's a really great program. And anything that you document then gets sent to the scientist, and we can use that as data to figure out what's going on in the world.
That sounds cool, because I never know what the hell anything is.
Yeah, if you don't know what it is, iNaturalist. It's a fantastic app.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, thank you both for being here. I had a great time, and we'll see you next time for Honey, I... What was the second one? I Blew Ourselves Up or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like
that. Okay, we probably won't do that movie. I'll see you later.
Bye!
Bad Science is hosted by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our social media producers are Kate Baker and EJ Gullett. And the executive pocket-sized deucer is Brett Kushner. Be sure to follow us on Instagram if you are on Instagram, at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show. You can send us an email letting us know what movie you'd like us to do next and any questions you have at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. Also, it would be great if you could leave us an iTunes review. That helps other people learn about the show, and we all really appreciate that. All right, that's it. I'll see you next week. Bye.